Welcome to The Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Lorraine Oldchurch, lead allied health support worker, has a clinical background as an assistant therapy practitioner in frailty, AMU, and ED. She leads workforce development for support workers across the trust and collaborates within the integrated care system. Passionate about supporting workforce development, she also co-chairs the West Midlands Regional Network for the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy.
Welcome back to the Right Chamber podcast. My name is Jaspreet.
My name is Victor.
And today we have a special guest. We'll let you do the introductions.
Thank you. Lorraine Oldchurch, and I'm the lead AHP support worker here at the Dudley Group.
Brilliant. Lovely to meet you. Could you tell us a little bit about the role and what that entails, or what AHP even means for some of our listeners who may not be aware?
Good question. Yeah, so AHP, Allied Health Professions. So there's 15 actually, if you count diagnostic radiography and therapeutic radiographers. So our allied health colleagues here that work within the organisation. And lead AHP support worker is I support the unregistered workforce that work with our allied health professions. So predominantly, I look at supporting training, education and professional development and continued professional development of the support workforce.
Basically, these are people who want to become allied health professionals.
Not necessarily, actually, because there is a good proportion of our unregistered workforce that are more than happy to be a support worker and stay in that role. And actually, my job, I feel, is really important to ensure that they can thrive in that role. And it's not just a route to become a registered clinician. And yes, there is career pathways and apprenticeships, etc., to go on to become a registered clinician. But it's equally important that we ensure our support workforce stay and thrive if they want to be a support worker in the role.
So what kind of roles like generally fall under that umbrella of support workers?
So within the acute setting, we've got assistant therapy practitioners that work in acute therapies, and that's like a blended role. You'll see like the lilac tunics that some of the support workers wear, and they can work in a various settings on the clinical wards, in outpatient settings. We have radiography aides working in the imaging department and in community settings as well. We have dietetic assistants. So there's a whole range. That's not just limited to those, but that's just to give you an example. Orthoptics for technicians as well. So yeah, we've got a whole range of support workers working in various settings.
So it's a lot of people that we may not even be aware of, really.
Yeah. All fall under the kind of the umbrella.
Yeah.
Okay. My thoughts had always been like, oh, so we have, because from the view of the doctor, you're just on the ward all the time, right? And no, you see the nurses, you see the clinical support workers, but learning about the wider community of staff members, you realize there are.
it is more than just the healthcare support worker on the ward. So in terms of a lead support worker, what is your day-to-day job role like? What do you do? I'm sure it's like different from day, but like just a typical one.
Yeah. Again, really good question. And no 2 days are the same, actually. So if I talk about yesterday, for example, I was at a local school talking to some year eight students about NHS careers, my own career journey. And, you know, a lot of people don't realise that they can come into the NHS in a support worker role and then progress through apprenticeships. And, you know, if they wish to go on to become a registered clinician. session. This afternoon, I've got a focus group for support workers, and that's across the whole of the Black Country, where we have guest speakers and CPD session for our support workers. I do some guest lecturing at some local universities on the assistant practitioner program. I support people who perhaps may be applying to university to go on to do an apprenticeship. Lots of varied things, really.
So how did you come into this role?
So I was working in the organisation as an assistant therapy practitioner in the therapy department. And I've always been really passionate about continuing to learn. So how do I be the best that I can be in my job to serve the patients and treat the patients that we're looking after? And that is through continuous professional development. But truthfully, there has been times in my career where that has felt like that is only for the registered clinicians and not for the support workforce. So I've really championed it and worked with my colleagues to embrace those opportunities for development and not just in that clinical sphere, you know, leadership opportunities, training and education. So when the opportunity came to as a secondment for the lead IHP support worker, I jumped at the opportunity because I thought this is my chance. This is my opportunity to champion and be a voice for support workforce that actually they're integral to the services that they work within. And if you want to stay a support worker, that's absolutely fine. But how can we make sure you're the best support worker? What opportunities are there for you? And it doesn't necessarily always mean to become a registered clinician.
So it's like there is like a development pathway even within your own role,
yeah,
as a support worker in whatever sector that might be in. Okay, that's really interesting. So in your role, what are the kind of challenges that you see support workers facing, which you have to kind of tackle or change?
Lots of barriers, actually. I've been recently involved in a subject matter expert in some research with Professor Richard Griffin, and he looked at the Cavendish Review 10 years on, and are support workers still invisible? And unfortunately, it is still the case that support workers do feel invisible and undervalued within their roles. And I feel my role is to empower our support workers, that they are integral to the services that they work within. But the barriers that they face is often opportunities to access training and development, unless it's your mandatory training or you want to become a registered clinician. But actually, we all treat the same patients, so we all should be continually professionally developing within our roles and keeping up to date with new advances. And that may be something pertinent to the speciality that you're working within. So our support workforce should also be availed to those opportunities. So some of it is around how do we amplify the voice of support workers so that they feel valued, their work matters, because it does to the patients that we treat. And how do we get them to feel the value of their work as well? Yeah, so that they can take those opportunities available to them. There's also the pressures within the services that we work within, isn't there? They're in high demand. So actually releasing staff to take those opportunities is also a real challenge.
Do you think that support workers are sometimes invisible because a lot of us don't really know about them, I suppose? But how has your role helped to make them a little bit more visible?
I would say that promoting and advocating for support workers is one of the big things of my role. I talked about the focus group a few moments ago, and actually from that focus group with support workers coming together across the Black Country, they voiced how they would like to celebrate, engage and learn together. And we recently had a conference at Himley Hall with support workers coming together, hearing about the challenges, that actually they realise that it's not just them individually facing those challenges, it's a collective. but also hearing about how support workers have gone on to do achievements and overcome those challenges and overcome those barriers to get them to the next stage where they want to be. So I think it's really important that we create those opportunities, but by creating those opportunities, we have to actively sometimes go out and promote our support workers to accept those opportunities, because they don't always think that that's for them. That's not for me. That's for somebody else. Well, no, it is for you.
That's interesting.
No, I think that's very important.
So it's like there's kind of several layers to opportunities for growth and for development. So there's the level of creating the opportunities in the first place to make sure that it's available. Then there's the place of support workers recognizing that the opportunities are there.
Yeah.
And then the final part of actually accepting it and taking on these opportunities. So it's kind of different fronts to tackle, and making sure it's available, but then also making people aware that it's there and that yes, they can do it, and they should feel empowered to go for these opportunities for training, for growth, and all the other fantastic things that I'm sure are available.
If I give an example recently, that the Dudley Improvement Practice team, they did a VSA event for the frailty improvement work, and they actively go out and seek and ensure that support workers and our admin staff are included in those events. And I went along to hear the experiences of support workers being involved in that. And they're proud of the services that they work within. They want to be part of the improvement. They want to be part of that journey and included. And often our support workforce are so close to the problems, they have the solutions. But we just need to create the space for them to be able to take those opportunities and actually including them in our improvement events, quality improvement and training, so that they can be part of the change that the organisation is trying to move forward with.
Absolutely. It's kind of like an untapped perspective, isn't it? Getting that view of support workers who are just as close, if not in some other case, in some cases even closer to patient care and to the running of the delivery of care that we give. So yeah, getting them involved in gathering of new data to contribute to new quality improvement endeavors is just and somewhere that's kind of like an untapped gold mine, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the in the Cavendish Review it was cited that support workers have a key bedside presence. You could say that in the community as well, that they are often spend the most amount of time with our patients. They're the eyes and the ears for our clinicians. Patients will often confide in a support worker, or actually maybe say, oh, I'm not quite sure what the doctor's just said to me. Can you translate that? And, they're in between for the patient and our clinicians. So, like you say, untapped opportunities, definitely.
I think that's very important that, like, we need to address this issue of not having that support workers part of the MDT as well. Mm. I think that's quite important to ask their opinion when doctors go on like ward rounds.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really important point as well.
Yeah, because it's all, we start the ward round, we want to get, who's looked after this patient overnight, for instance. You want the lead nurse if they're available, but most often the nurse on that station or that day. But then, the allied health professional was also there, getting them involved and getting their opinion. There will be a different part of patient care that you might otherwise miss. So definitely a valued.
You're right to say that sometimes patients confide a lot more in support workers. Sometimes they just don't feel comfortable talking to the doctors because of the amount of times they see us, whereas support workers are there.
Yeah, you build rapport.
Yeah.
Whereas the ward round, you see the doctor for 5-10 minutes, a plan is made, and then that's it, move on to the next patient. Whereas if you're seeing someone constantly throughout the day and night, definitely important to include.
also our clinical support workers that work really closely with our allied health profession support workers and our nursing colleagues, because they equally spend long amounts of times with our patients. They get to know them really well. They get to know what they like, what they don't like. So it's, you know, support workforce in a big umbrella term, I think, is the untapped opportunity there.
For our current support workers, what are the, or sorry, it's putting you on the spot, but off the top of your head, any kind of available training opportunities or any thing going on now that they can perhaps look into?
So like quality improvement projects that they can join?
So with individual services, I would say that, you know, for our support workers to actively go and seek with their supervisors, what are our service objectives? How can I get involved? But to empower them to be able to take that leap, I've worked with Dudley College and the West Midlands Combined Authority, and we've developed some training courses, and it's a personal professional development course at level 2 and level 3 for support workers to be involved in, and it helps them in leadership and growth, having difficult conversations, how to lead a team. And that doesn't mean that they have to be a team leader. It's we all lead. It's how do we unleash those skills for our support workforce? And they get also to be part of a quality improvement project. So we are developing resources and opportunities for our support workers. And we're on our 7th cohort of support workers going on to that at the moment.
Brilliant. So they just need to get in contact with the supervisors, and then it will be made apparent the different areas that they can go into to build up their skills and build up their own professional development as well. Amazing. Off camera, we mentioned a little bit about some of the uses of language when it comes to support workers. Tell us a little bit about kind of why language might be important.
I think language we use is really important, and especially to, you know, when we're thinking about the what our patients hear, and often we hear the banded qualified and unqualified, and that's something that I have actively tried to improve myself firstly, and I ask others to think about that language, because support workforce are all qualified to do the role that they do. But often you will hear, oh, I can't answer that, I can't do that. That's for the qualified to do. And thinking about that really actively when our patients might hear that, our support workforce are really valuable and highly skilled and trained to do the job that they do. Registration is a scope of practice. And that's where we need to be thinking about when we think about our support workforce and valuing their skills that they have. And often those skills about building rapport with our patients, leading them, those interprofessional skills that we have with our patients, they're something that they build and grow all the time. And it's not about the level of degree education that you have, is it?
And it's something that, you know, really throw around and you don't think much into it. But as you've just explained, yeah, being wary of how you use those, you know, those terms like, oh, qualified to do this or unqualified to do that. You are in your role because you qualify to be in your role. You know, you've met, a list of specifications that you've had to meet to get there. So you are qualified to do what you do. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's important to be careful of how we use those terms.
Because a patient can easily just think that they're just not qualified. Yeah. What are they doing
and,
here?
And it can hurt patient trust as well.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And the other thing, the NHS. Broadly, not just this organisation, we use banding so much. And banding is a pay grade. You're effectively just talking about how much you're being paid. And if you go out into private sector, you wouldn't know what anybody was paid. That's your level of responsibility. It's not your job. It's not your value or your worth.
That is true. We hear that a lot on the world on band 5 and band 6.
Like, yeah.
Go ask the band 6 instead.
Yeah.
And we're just like, we just need help.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a person, you know, it's somebody that's got skills and, you know, knowledge and experience. And we just put a title on their head of I'm the band 2 or I'm the band 6 or,
yeah.
You know, that sometimes people introduce themselves as that. And
But if you've met, you know, the criteria to do the competency, you know, you're competent to do whatever it is you've been asked to do, then your band in that time doesn't really matter. You've met the competency, you know, you're competent to do this thing. So, you know, you should feel confident and free to do it, because then it doesn't delay care. You're not now, you know, looking for someone of a specific band or,
exactly,
you know, to get a job done.
Because I suppose that's a lot different for like doctors. If we have the skill, we're allowed to do it. I'm not sure about support workers.
Well, if it's within your job specification, if it's within your roles and responsibilities, then yeah. But it's about how we recognise that. And sometimes it's always seen that you go to the higher banding to get permission or release to be able to do that. And actually sometimes we can often release that protection because we just seek for titles and banding for authorization. And sometimes that is really valid and needed and necessary, but we don't need to use the title of that. You're escalating for a clinical need, perhaps.
Yeah. Rather than being like, well, I'm banned too, can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, or just say that, well, I am qualified to do this. Can I do it? Rather than putting the ban there and saying that, can I or cannot.
Yeah.
Or if there's an emergency and you know that it's not within your scope, it's not within your responsibility, you're escalating for senior help, as anybody would do in that situation.
You've got healthcare, support workers, and there is scope for growth within your role, and there's also scope for development, even if you wanted to step out of your role as well, to see what else you can apply into. So it's about not limiting yourself, recognizing that you are very valuable to the workforce and being confident in that and what you offer, and then seeking opportunities to develop, you know, either within your role, which can be, you know, is something to be proud of, and there are things that you can achieve within your role, and then also if you do want to go down the route of becoming registered and looking for opportunities for growth within there as well, it is, the world can be your oyster, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's just about seeking it out, speaking to your seniors. If you had any other advice that you could give to support workers now, what would that be?
Your barriers are the barriers that you put in front of yourself, and they can easily be taken down with self-belief. I would definitely say grow your network and seeking out opportunities, perhaps maybe for mentoring or shadowing other people, so that you can see how others maybe have overcome some of those challenges. And peer-to-peer support is the best way to do that, and growing your network.
One last question. How can the public learn more about the different roles of AHBs? Just because, you know, they have different uniforms, so sometimes like hard to like keep track of what colour is what.
Yeah, I mean, national uniform profiles is a huge thing, isn't it? So it is difficult. And there is lots of national resources for our, allied health professions. But I would say that the biggest thing is we need to promote who we are, and actually when we're with our patients, you know, we all introduce ourselves and the roles that we undertake. So I think it's about continuing to do that as well with our patients.
Properly like introduce and...
Yeah. My name is so-and-so and I work in this department.
Yeah.
And I am qualified to do everything that this department requires of me. And just being confident in presenting yourself. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. It's been lovely to hear about the wide scope of what allied health professionals provide and how vital they are to the NHS as an organisation, learning about the growth that's possible and the opportunities available for people to seek out. So I think this will benefit a lot of people, and I think also lots of people will just know more now about support workers, because it is a little bit of a grey area, isn't it, if you're unfamiliar with the hospital workforce.
it's grey area for like people who are working in the hospital. So
yeah, so I can imagine
that was very informative.
Brilliant. Very lovely to have you on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening. And yeah, as always, if you have any contributions or you want to take part on the podcast, get in touch with us, interact with the podcast, the videos, the audio, on whatever platform.